welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group Podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Labor and Employment Law Practice Group, was recorded on Tuesday, July 23, 2019, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members. Welcome to the Federal Society's telephone conference call. This afternoon's topic is on Americans with Disabilities Act litigation enters a new frontier, websites. My name is Wesley Hodges, and I'm the Associate Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today we are very fortunate to have with us Karen Harnett, who is Executive Director at the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Legal Center. After our speaker gives her opening remarks, we will have an audience Q&A, so please keep in mind what questions you have for this topic or for Karen herself. Thank you very much for sharing this today. Karen, the floor is yours.
Thanks, and thanks for those joining us on this call on what really is an important topic and becoming more so one every day. Most of us, I would think by now, are familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act that was enacted in 1990. And in relevant part requires, and I quote, that no individual shall be discriminated against on the basis of disability in the full and equal enjoyment of the goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, or accommodations of any place of public accommodation by a person who owns, leases, or operates a place of public accommodation, end quote. This is known as Title III, the Americans with Disabilities Act. Title I refers to how the rights of the disabled in the employment space and in the workplace and the workforce. Title II is a special title that applies to the state government and federal governments. And then this Title III is known as the public accommodation section because it concerns all businesses everywhere. And interestingly, or I guess not interestingly enough, Section 301 of that title really does have an extensive list of the types of businesses that need to make sure that their establishments are accessible to the disabled. And they, you know, they've got an inn, hotel, motel, place of lodging, a restaurant or bar, a motion picture house, an auditorium, bakery, grocery store, daycare center, nursery, elementary, secondary school, park, zoo, amusement park, even specifically saying a gymnasium, health spa, bowling alley, golf course, or other place of exercise or recreation. All of those places are listed in Title III is specific places that need to make sure that those that are disabled can enjoy those places and they can be accommodated to do that. So when the ADA was passed in 1990, websites had just started and mobile applications did not even exist. Obviously, fast forward to 2019, and that is no longer the case at all. They're all over the place. So what we had seen prior to this newest round of litigation on the website era, in the website era, is when it came to just businesses, think of maybe your harder businesses to access, like the, you know, it's beach season, right? And you're on the boardwalk and you're going into one of those small little surf shops that sells T-shirts. Under the law, that needed to be accessible. They had a grandfather clause in there for older businesses, older facilities that were pre-1990. But once they did any renovation, including just updating their bathroom, all of the ADA requirements would apply to that business. And so what we'd been seeing since, I don't know, probably I'd say late 1990s at least, there were a lot of lawsuits that were being brought against business owners and still today are for problems with their physical space. And in many instances, there's probably something wrong there and it needs to be corrected. But it also has been an area where there's been a lot of abuse to the point that even in California, you've seen trial lawyers bringing these types of suits get sanctioned for frivolous, abusive litigation and you know, not really, you know, basically doing drive-by lawsuits, if you will, just having somebody go in there one time, no intention to ever go back, bring a lawsuit and bring hundreds of these types of lawsuits. I put all that as background because we're beginning to see the same thing happen with websites, yet unlike the physical accommodations, there's really no, well, there is no statutory language beyond just the general requirement that people that are disabled have the ability to enjoy the space, have access to the goods and services provided if they're disabled. And so Congress did update the Americans with Disabilities Act in 2008. That focused on employees and what it meant to be disabled as far as being a worker. But I note that just because that was an opportunity for them to update the statute on the website, and they failed to do that. Meanwhile, at the Department of Justice, they have never done a firm pronouncement on what it means to do websites apply. Does the ADA apply to websites? And if they do, I guess they have said that it does apply to websites. So I'm sorry, I misstated that. But they've never issued a rulemaking. They had an advance notice of rulemaking that was on the books for at least 8 years under the Obama administration, but then was pulled and never went to fruition. So there was no rulemaking there. So the plaintiffs bar that has been active over the last several decades in the public accommodation space when it came to physical premises has now gotten active in the website space and mobile app space. And so the law, quite frankly, is being written by them, because all the other arbiters out there really have taken a pass, both Congress and DOJ. I mean, DOJ did issue a letter, before I get into the case at hand, DOJ did issue a letter last September, which was relatively good in that it said that this Uber guidance, web content accessibility guidelines, WCAG 2.0 or 2.1, which had just been privately developed and are very expensive to make your website compatible with, that doesn't mean that to be compliant as a website in 2019, you don't have to comply with that, you know, platinum standard, that there's places businesses can have a more flexible approach, that the key is, can the person that's disabled enjoy the benefits of those services, order the goods, that sort of thing. But other than this letter that was sent in response to a congressional inquiry last September by DOJ, that's really the only reading we have other than what is coming out of the courts, which is now brings us to today. So just this last month, Domino's has asked the Supreme Court to hear its case on Domino's versus Robles. And Mr. Robles had gone on to Domino's website and tried to order a pizza, and he's blind and he couldn't custom order it. But there were other ways for him to order that pizza. He could obviously call the restaurant and ask for delivery, and they also had a 24-hour hotline that you could call if, as a disabled person, you were having trouble accessing parts of the website. Because my understanding is with that particular website, it really was the issue of when you were custom ordering your pizza, not all of the pictures were being described correctly, or I don't know. It was just complicated and, I guess, for all intents and purposes, not doable. Although the law in this area has not been developed by Congress or the regulators, it is the hope of Domino's, and quite frankly, us, I represent, as Wesley said, the National Federation of Independent Business, Small Business, that the Supreme Court might step in here, because there are, with the plaintiffs bar working this out in the courts, there is now a circuit split as to what is required. So it's just very ambiguous. And meanwhile, there are literally thousands of lawsuits that are being filed each year alleging that a business's website does not comply with the ADA. And so we really need some clarity here. And so we're hopeful that the Supreme Court might answer the call and resolve this circuit split. So the circuit split is actually pretty extensive. The First, Second, and Seventh Circuit, they have said that websites that are offering goods or services to the public are standalone public accommodations. And if they're inaccessible, they fail to provide they fail to live up to the standards of the ADA, and you're liable under that statute. But the Third, Sixth, and Ninth Circuits have said that web-only enterprises do not face Title III liability. And moreover, in the First, Second, and Seventh Circuits, where they say that if there's a standalone business that is a website, you must have, you know, you must make your website public, accommodate the disabled under the ADA. the first, second, and seventh, they say that if an individual lacks access to a particular location, if they're a brick and mortar location, that any offerings are considered standalone for that. So basically, if you've got a standalone business, brick and mortar like Domino's, and they've got stores, but they also have the websites, under the first, second, and seventh circuits, they look at whether your restaurant physical location is open to the disabled and compliant with the ADA. And then they separately look at whether or not the website is openly accessible to the ADA. So you can get hit on either one. Whereas the third, sixth, and 11th circuits have said, look, if you're Domino's and there's a way to get in and you know, call and order that pizza, you have access to a delivery method or something like that, then you're fine. We're not going to look separately at whether or not your website is compliant. First, second, and seventh circuits say we are. Third, sixth, and 11th say we are not. Interesting, the ninth is kind of weird in that it says, well, I guess they actually followed the third, sixth, and 11th. So they're also saying that we're going to look and see if your restaurant is, or I'm sorry, they're like the first, second, and seventh. I'm sorry, it gets so confusing. But anyway, they say that we're going to look at whether your restaurant is separately and your website separately. So that's where we are. So you've got the case going up saying that websites have to be looked at separately for whether or not the disabled can access them. I apologize for that. And so that's where we are, and we are hopeful that the Supreme Court's going to take this because it's kind of a mess. And in the meantime, we're now seeing banks, hotels, all manner of businesses being sued. And although the DOJ has said that you don't have to do the platinum standard to be compliant as a website under the Americans with Disabilities Act, that doesn't prevent private litigants from continuing to litigate these issues. And so that really is the nub, if you will, that these, until this is resolved by someone, this is going to go on. And quite frankly, it's pretty clear that Congress isn't going to do anything here. And again, DOJ has taken a pass at this point too. So we are going to be interested to see what happens with this case and whether they take it. The briefs were just filed, so we're hoping to hear at the beginning of next term whether or not this goes up to the Supreme Court. That's pretty much the bottom line, and then I'm happy to take other questions.
Thank you, Karen. That was a very healthy bottom line. Thank you so much. Karen, while we wait for any audience questions, would you mind just taking a minute to dive a bit deeper on what the plaintiff's bar is looking like right now?
Right. Well, so we're already seeing serial offenders, you know, different law firms that are bringing, you know, really making a cottage industry out of suing in this regard. And so just from, you know, 2017 to 2018, we saw an increase by thousands of the lawsuits that have been brought here. If the public accommodation space of just physical premises is any indication, we think that this is just going to continue to explode on the website front. You may have seen 60 Minutes did a piece on the public accommodation of just hotels, for example, and restaurants a year or two ago, in which now with drones and other things, they're looking, and if you even have a pool at your hotel and they don't see the lift there, they're going to file a lawsuit, and nobody even will have entered the property asking for that kind of access. And interestingly, there was even somebody in Minnesota during the winter that had filed a lawsuit against an outdoor pool that didn't have accessibility based on a picture that was taken from the side of the road. And then to the extent the attorneys are suing on the websites as if and also on these public accommodations of physical brick-and-mortar stores, what you're seeing is they're going to resolve it just with that one entity. They're not going to resolve it more broadly. And so the disabled community isn't even actually served. In fact, what we've seen on the physical side, and I assume we're going to see again on the website side, is many times the business will just pay the money and then that will be it. So you won't even get a resolution for the disabled overall. That may change a little bit on the website side, but you still are seeing these one-off kind of solutions that really involve at the end of the day how much money is going to be paid out more than anything else. And that is a concern and really just not the way the law should be constructed.
Well, very good. Thank you so much, Karen. We do have two questions from the audience. Let's go to our first caller.
Hi, Joe McManaman calling from Richmond, Virginia. Thank you for your remarks. Your most recent comments may have, in a sense, anticipated my question. I was wondering what kinds of relief are typically sought by plaintiffs in these matters and what kinds of relief to this point have been granted, and does it extend to equity, or are injunctions part of the formula?
I do not litigate all these cases, so I don't know about the injunction question. Most of the relief definitely is financial. What you will see, though, especially more on the website area, is once somebody starts getting sued, for example, I was visiting with a company, you know, not long ago that, you know, as soon as that happened, they did take it upon themselves to go ahead and go with the gold standard, if you will, on what the guidelines, the privately developed guidelines of what a compliant website would be. So because the web is so ubiquitous and accessible, I do think that there is more of a broader blanket that the companies are going to be taking to fix the problem after it's been identified through litigation. But the cost of that is not insignificant. Depending on the complexity of a website, for example, my understanding is, and this was said in the cert petition actually, that banks are estimating that to satisfy their website accessibility requirements, it could be up to $3 million a website because of all of the pages and just the way it is. And then, interestingly enough, some of the newer lawsuits I spoke with the reporter, you know, just a few months ago, were in New York City, where art galleries, if you can believe it, are being sued for not having website accessible art galleries. And, you know, it's one thing to describe, you know, say there's going to be pepperoni on this pizza. There's quite another to say what a painting looks like to someone that can't see. And so that, I think, also shows you how aggressive the plaintiff's bar has become, and that is actually a target of theirs. They've literally been going through the phone book A to Z of the art galleries in New York suing on this very issue.
Thank you very much. Here comes our second caller.
Hi, my name is Matthew Howell. I'm a professor at Eastern Kentucky University in Richmond. We're doing ADA compliance on our website now, and we've been running into an issue with archived documents. So these are PDF documents we've had to upload for reporting graduation rates and such like that, which screen readers have difficulty dealing with. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about other types of archived documents on websites and how those have been coming up in the lawsuits. Thank you.
Well, that is one of the issues that is raised in this petition, is just that sort of thing, that you can't, again, like my art dealer example, that, you know, there's not software that can even work, I think, on some of these types of issues right now. I'm not convinced the technology, I guess is what I would say, is there yet, as your example describes, which is yet another issue. And so I think that's why the petition does a nice job of talking about what are we trying to accomplish here? Like, what was the ADA intended to do? And if you're able to access something as a disabled person, do you have to be able to access it in every medium possible? And we would argue that the answer, in order to have full enjoyment of it, and we would argue that the answer is no to that question. And that's really, I think, interpreting the statute so rigidly on a statute that actually has a very exhaustive, as I started, list of what is covered by the ADA, you know, down to golf courses and spas. So all that to say that, you know, that is one of the big issues that on the website frontier, if you will, continues to be a problem, is that there's a trouble anticipating everything that will be on a website and making sure that there's a way with current technology to make that accessible to the disabled in every instance. And I just think the answer to that is clearly no, and therefore liability doesn't make sense.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, caller. Well, seeing no immediate questions, Karen, I'd like to turn the mic back to you to see if you have any additional thoughts.
I would just say that we are hopeful that the Supreme Court will take this case and resolve this issue. It is, unfortunately, even though this is a very important statute for, you know, the disabled and really all Americans, that, you know, we want to make sure that there's equal access. I know our members, you know, want to serve all customers everywhere, regardless of what physical impairments they may have. But it's just unfortunate that due to the current dysfunction in our system of government, that we're really allowing the trial bar in this area, and we again see it in many other areas too, to write the law for all of us. It's not efficient, it's not effective, it's not fair. It's our hope that the Supreme Court at least will step in and give us more clarity in this space so that we can limit, if not get rid of, this kind of abuse that we're seeing right now in our civil justice system.
Well, thank you, Karen, and we do appreciate you shining a light on this subject. On behalf of the Federal Society, we'd like to thank you for the benefit of your very valuable time and expertise. We welcome all listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us for this call. We are now adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.